Listen, I've never had any problem expressing my opinions, but what we're doing here is bigger than that. These are conversations that need to be had in an unfiltered way. Drag racing's all I've ever done. It's all I care to do. I respect the history, I appreciate how far we've come, but I want more for this sport, and I'll fight for it. It's uncut, it's unfiltered, this is the show of shows. The biggest names in drag racing. No holds barred. This is the Great American Motorsport. Drag racing. Prove me wrong, I'll wait. Hey gang, Wes Buck here, Drag Illustrated Magazine, checking in. It is Wednesday, January 31st, 2024. What's up? How are you? Thank you for joining us here as we gather around to spread the gospel of drag racing. Want to give a huge shout out to all of our show's sponsors, including Stroud Safety, Redline Synthetic Oils, Racers Club, Aeromotive Fuel Systems, and I believe a new upcoming partner we have in the coming weeks, thefote.com. So guys, so much going on in the sport of drag racing right now. We're fresh off a week of record-setting moments taking place down at Bradenton Motorsports Park, where we're going to see a slew of exciting action in the coming weeks. We'll talk about that momentarily, but it was crazy. I don't know that I've personally seen, and it really defied a lot of my like really hard, like firmly kept beliefs, the reaction to Todd Moyer's shot heard round the world record-setting run last week, and the significance of that happening on the same day as Jason Scruggs resetting the 8th mile door slammer world record, and just the reaction that has been in the last few days. Really, it started midweek when these moments happened, and then it was just it's been almost unbelievable to see this snowball. And I want to talk about that here today on the Wes Buck Show. We've got an exciting lineup of conversation, debate. Hopefully we can maybe, I was thinking about this the other day. I need to make sure we're going to have to hire some token argumentative types, because all of us here on the Drag Illustrated side of the fence tend to see things very similarly, and it would be fun to get some people on here to disagree with us a little bit. Before we talk about all things the Pro Superstar Shootout, these record-setting moments, what it means for drag racing, I want to introduce my co-host here on the show, Mike Carpenter, JT Hudson. What's up, boys? You doing well? Are you guys worn slick yet? It's been 8 months of planning, having gone into the Skag Power Equipment Pro Superstar Shootout. An equal amount, many years of planning going into the Drag Illustrated World Series of Pro Mod. We're on the cusp of these things unfolding next week, February 8th, 9th, and 10th. We are going to burn some nitro and bang some gears down at Bradenton Motorsports Park for the Pro Superstar Shootout. Then just 3 short weeks later, we return for the Drag Illustrated World Series of Pro Mod. I guess let's just talk about like historical significance. I think that this is something.
Come on here and just talk about arguing. Me and JT will argue.
JT, has no problem with that. Hey, I'll fight.
I was getting teed up for that.
Okay, well let's argue about this. Why is it that the sport of drag racing, I have one of the things that I just get a little bit frustrated with or struggle with is the way we as a sport are so laser focused on our past. Like it's crazy. It's almost like we're so wrapped up in the nostalgia of our sport in these glory days that like, I find myself a touch, you know, like not, I mean, it is what it is and things are going to happen, but I mean, I feel like we're in the buildup. The next 30 days, guys, over $1.5 million is going to be paid to drag racers. We have a $1.3 million combined purse at the Pro Superstar Shootout. We have a near $300,000 purse at the World Series of Pro Mod a few weeks later. I mean, if you think about the historical significance of this, I see all the, I think sometimes I'm just struggling. Does everybody get what's about to happen here? And in the moment that this could represent, we haven't seen anything like this in drag racing since the 70s. I don't know that we've seen many ripple effects or potential ripple effects more significant than this since the start of drag racing, but I feel like it's being maybe a little like glossed over.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I don't know. It seems to be getting talked about a lot. So I don't know if it's been glossed over, you know, per se, but
I think I'm specifically to the media. You know what I mean? Because like I recognize that the drag racing media isn't as robust as it once was, but it does feel like there's several people that have established voices, whether that's associated to an outlet or just their personal brand, if you will. But it does feel like some of these things, and I take it with some pride, to be honest. I'm like, of course there are people in this ecosystem that maybe don't want to see this succeed or have some preconceived notion, but it does feel like
that's going to be some of it. That's going to be some of it as well. And if you have ties to both, you know, like I've got ties to these racers, but I have ties to the NHRA, and you know, I guess maybe some people don't want to upset the apple basket. Is that what they say?
Apple basket.
You can upset it.
You can put apples in anything.
You can put apples in anything.
You're talking about being tied to something, though, it's the fact that both of these events are tied to us as a media outlet. That's the truth of it there. So you've got that kind of going into it. Both Pro Superstar Shootout and World Series of Pro Mod clearly are tied to us, and we're the only ones promoting it on a regular basis. Competition Plus also out there doing their thing. But yeah, you're kind of asking people in a little bit of a way to choose side, I guess, or they're seeing it that way. I did see an interest. Speaking of Comp Plus, they did a great interview with Glenn Cromwell. I don't know if you guys saw this the site, and actually asked the question about the Pro Superstar Shootout. And Glenn gave the biggest non-answer of all non-answers that you could give, which I think kind of says a lot. It's obviously the elephant in the room, as it says in the article. And, it's created some interesting bedfellows, I guess, as you could say, and some dividing lines and lines in the sand. But everyone that's on board with this deal, I think, is excited about it. We had a multi-hundred person Zoom call yesterday.
Yeah, we did.
With all of the constituents of this event. And now that it's here, man, and all the work has gone into it, and we're literally a week away, I think the excitement is starting to set in. In fact, Bob Tasca had a great point yesterday on that call with us, saying the hard part is almost done. Now it's time to have fun. And so I think that says a lot. And I hope that that's the mindset that everyone's carrying into this.
Agreed. I mean, I think that was the point I wanted to drive home on that call yesterday, was like, now's the time to be excited. And now's the time to be proud of what we've done and go enjoy the fruits of our labor, because this deal, and I think part of it for me is that like, I've already like seen it play out in my head. Like I visualization and all this manifestation stuff is like the frou-frou thing to be doing right now. But I just think about it so much that I've kind of already seen it play out in my head. And I have to kind of like remind myself that like, there are people that I'm from Missouri, right, JT, the show me state. And I think that there are a certain percentage of people that are going to need to see it. You know what I mean? And I think that it's true, to really understand where we're trying to go with this and where we are.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And it's the first of its kind with what we're doing and taking this show to Bradenton Motorsports Park. So there's a lot of unknowns, and it's been an interesting road for all of us. Bob made another good point yesterday, saying if you knew what all was going to be involved in this and how hard it was going to be, kind of speaking to the whole group, you wouldn't have done it. And that's an interesting thing to think about, because if you're giving that information, or you know 100% what you're going to face over the next 8 months putting this event together, no one in their right mind is going to sign up for it. But it just unfolds as it goes, and we're all here now and have done the work. And so now it's time to see how it's going to play out. And we got a few tiny loose ends to tie up, man, but really we're here now. And nothing is changing dramatically from what we've done. Everything's printed, shipped, and we're going to see what we got when we get down there.
And it's going to take everybody, you know, like,
yep.
I mean, even fans, just give us a little bit, you know, let us get settled in. It's the first time, right, for this race. So, I mean, but it'll take everybody lending a hand, everybody going with the flow a little bit, you know.
I feel like we've got to
maybe get your hands dirty every now and then, you know.
Yeah, I mean, really, I feel like this is an opportunity, and I hate to make these things like political or whatever, because we get enough of that in our daily lives, but it feels like this is a moment in time, a rising up, if you will, and racers taking matters into their own hands and setting an example and raising the standard across the board. Like, I think that that's what we have to do. It doesn't need to be, it's not nefarious. It's not something where, like, it's not some dirty secret. Let's elevate the entire sport. And like, someone has to lead that charge. Someone has to be, you know, and it is. I mean, you're going to meet a lot of obstacles. You're going to meet some resistance. And I think a lot of these things that, you know, get called crazy and insane and destined for failure are typically the things that ended up changing the world. And I look at the sport of drag racing and I feel like we're due. Like, the same way, you know, in American politics, it feels like we're due for change, whatever that is. Like, you feel the moment kind of happening. And that's what I see here, because I feel like a lot of the things, like silly things that a lot of people, very polarizing items like the invitation format, we talked about that a few weeks ago, but that's quickly becoming a normal operating procedure in drag racing. And I think the point we're driving home with that is that the fans deserve to know who's coming first and foremost. It makes things more manageable for the promoters. It makes it a win-win situation. With a significant entry fee, your racers are pot committed. Therefore, they're highly likely to attend. I feel like we're kind of creating some framework there that can be applied to other events to help make them successful. And like, I see that continuing here, is that like, at some point at the highest levels, and this is kind of swinging the pendulum away from that aspect and going to just the mainstream media attention, we're seeing that like, we're getting attention from the local regional media down around Florida, and Nitro Funny Cars race down there all the time, you know, or at least once a year at the Gator Nationals for 50 some odd years. So like, this, the purse is what's driving that interest. So we're showing people that when done well, your racer purse can be part of your marketing budget. Like, if you're going to spend a bunch of money on billboards,
and it's how you frame it,
radio ads or whatever, you could maybe shift that investment, pay more, but recognize that a certain amount of that serves a promotional purpose.
It's how you frame it, because I've heard some, you know, NHRA types talk about that the purse for each NHRA national event is well over $1 million. And that's true, but it's just spread out across a ton of classes, and it's the way the whole deal is presented. So it's just presenting it a different way, being proud of it. And I also think the whole thing speaks to independent events. I think drag racing is the strongest when we have strong independent events, whether that be Donald Long's events, whether that be our events, anything going on at Bradenton, any track across the country, Midwest, XRP, all the stuff going on down there. Not just in not door cars, not fuel cars, across the board, period.
Yeah.
Even IHRA. We talk about how drag racing was the strongest when IHRA was a strong contender to NHRA. And it doesn't have to be all or nothing. It doesn't have to be everything NHRA and then and nothing else. I think this strengthens the sport. It actually strengthens NHRA. It strengthens everyone when you have that push-pull tension of alternative sanctioning bodies, tracks, organizations, you know, doing well. So I think that there's just the strength of independent events over the last 5 or 10 years is the direction we're seeing the sport going. And this is a continuation of that,
right? I mean, it just creates a buzz around the sport. And then that buzz, maybe they weren't even into NHRA before that. And then they're getting more into it. And then they start paying attention to NHRA. And I mean, that's just what it is. It's just, you got more of that stuff going on. You got more people involved, more people paying attention, you know, more eyeballs on the TV screen later on, you know, for the big dogs, I guess you'd say. Right.
Yeah.
But in the invitational format, you know, I play in an event every year that's invitational, and it's been invitational since I don't know, as long as I can remember, back when I was 18, and there's a waiting list to get on it. You know, back even when there was tournaments that were canceling because they couldn't even get enough participants, you know, to field and get the money right. So, but you always want to go to that one though, because if you lose your spot, you know, then you go to the back of the bus and you're not invited back the next year. So,
yeah, supply and demand. It's like the Green Bay Packers. They have like a 100-year waiting list or something for their season tickets, and you know, they could do something about that or change it probably and maybe help satisfy demand. But why do that, man? Because what that, you know, rumor or tale of it's a 100-year waiting list is what keeps people going and interested. If you could just walk into a Packers game at any point, like you can a Carolina Panthers game, you wouldn't want to go. And so it changes the whole dynamic. And as soon as, like JT, if they canceled that tournament or opened it up to everyone, all of a sudden the allure of it would be gone. Are you going to the Invitational this year? Man, I don't know. I might do something else this year, but because
you'll grab a scrub, you know, to play with you know, just to hold your spot, basically. You know, you're giving your money, but you're holding your spot for the next year.
I think it just all goes back to changing the dynamic, right? And I think that there's been this dynamic, you know, where that has existed for years, and it's really just been a lack of cohesion, a lack of communication. But we've got it where I think there's this a little bit of a dynamic that's like the racers, like, hey, the track promoters need us. They don't have a show without us. And all these things are true, but without the promoters and without the tracks, we don't have places for those cars to be raced. So like, we've got to find a way to just make that relationship a little more functional. And I think that the invitation format really allows for that to happen, because to your point, Mike, you create some scarcity, you create some supply and demand, and that helps you, across the board in every category. Like we've mentioned, your fans get to know who's coming. It makes parking more manageable. I mean, it makes the aspect and the logistics of the event much more manageable. And the other thing that I think that I'm particularly excited about goes back to a conversation I had, and I've talked about this before, but 10 years ago, maybe longer, maybe 15 years ago, a conversation I had with Kenny Nolling. And it was me asking him if he was concerned about a poor car count in one of his classes at an ADRL race back in Valdosta, Georgia in like 2006, I guess it was. And there was like four cars and they were expecting 12, and it was just kind of a bummer deal or whatever. And I went up to and asked him, you know, man, I bet you're devastated. You know, I'm so sorry about this situation. I let you down or whatever. And he goes, Wes, we only need two cars to have a drag race. And it really resonated with me and reminded me of just the value of a singular drag race, because and I want to ask Mike and JT this question, because one of the things I think we're establishing here is perhaps a new way to judge a drag race, that it's not just by the number of cars. I think that's something that's existed in our sport for years and years and years. One of the things we promoters often like to tout is how many cars are here. Oh, there's 375 cars on the property. We got 600 cars. We got 900 cars, almost 1,000 cars in some instances, like the U.S. Nationals. Mike, JT, I mean, I think one of the things that I feel proud of is demonstrating that an event's success, impact, relevance is not predicated entirely on the number of cars that are there. I look back at the World Series of Pro Mod in 2023, under 200 cars on the property are right there. And I look forward to this year's running with the number being about the same, slightly over with the addition of Pro 10-5 and Top Sportsman and Top Dragster. But we will have roughly 150 cars on the property for the Pro Superstar Shootout. And I'm hoping to drive that home, that we don't have to, it doesn't have to be. This isn't an either or, because I'm not, you know, faulting the events that get these massive car counts. And it's a fantastic situation to find yourself in. But I do want to demonstrate that there's a way to do one of these deals with a small, concise show.
Yeah. And I mean, don't you think that possibly there's a place for a show that has that many cars? And then would you also consider that maybe sometimes it's too much for a show? And it creates too long of a show, or, you know, or maybe you could get a better show with fewer cars and, you know, some of the top cars or whatever. You know, I'm just saying that, I mean, I think there's room for both.
Yeah. Right? It's less of a show at that point and more like participant driven.
It's like a music festival compared to going to a concert. Correct.
Right.
I mean, yeah. You're in for the long haul. You know, you've got 1,000 cars on the property.
Pace yourself. You got to pace yourself, JT. Yeah. No, there are two different things. And it's more, I think drag racing, we talk about just the number of participants that it has and that it's the largest motorsport in all those regards. But this is more of getting away from that and making a better show, to JT's point, by controlling all these aspects of it and focusing on certain numbers of classes and telling the story you know, letting the characters show and making it something that's watchable, whether it's on TV, live streaming, or in person. So it definitely goes back to that. But to me, the other thing that I think drives these events, and I kind of would like to segue in this discussion, because it's something that I think affects both World Series. Well, it affected last weekend at US Street. It affects World Series and Pro Superstar Shootout, is performances. We're starting to see more and more talk about these record-breaking performances with Todd Moyer. And we actually just had a press release go out yesterday talking about Bob Brockmeyer and CompuLink going in and kind of checking up and making sure everything is up to snuff with the Bradenton timing system, because these guys are going down there for the Pro Superstar Shootout, looking at the weather forecast and everything, the time of year, the track surface, thinking that this could be the quickest and fastest event in the sport's history for these types of cars. So, and of course we want that for US Street, for World Series of Pro Mod, on the Pro Mod level also. So as far as that driving the conversation, what's your take on that, Wes? Because we've always been so much, you know, it's about the racing, it's about characters, it's about all that. But now, like we talked about last week, when we got to kind of live react to Todd Moyer's performance, it sort of reminded me that every time these guys go out, they want to be able to say, we're going to set records this weekend.
It's a massive driver. And I think it goes down to how we racers validate this effort. And it's hard to validate it at times. Like at times it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you're driving through wherever on your way to the next racetrack, exhausted, all your stuff's torn to pieces in the trailer, your wife's mad, and the bank account's burning up. I mean, it's hard to validate what you're doing going drag racing in those moments sometimes. And I think that the reaction I see across the board to those record setting runs, to me, just speaks of this shared appreciation, like this shared appreciation for the grind that is the drag racing dream. And very few people achieve measurable success without fairly prolonged periods of failure in drag racing. Very, very rarely do we see someone come into the sport and have tremendous success and sustain that. It's typically a process. And I look at these reactions to the records, and this isn't an isolated incident. I mean, I see it how often Frankie Taylor is talked about. That 3.48 second run he made in 2016 at Rockingham, that was like a religious moment in the sport of drag racing. And I think it just speaks to how connected and unified this group of people really are, maybe to a level we don't totally understand, because we all do it different, right? Big tires, small tires, prep, no prep, sportsman heads up, and the list goes on. The variations are almost endless in drag racing, but we all relate on that level of setting. And I think people, it's more connected to the respect for the personal accomplishment. It's not, because I would say the sensation, it's all relative. Do you guys remember when we talked to Justin Bond here last summer on this very program? He talked about how the worst thing you can really do is go race a car that you can't continue to race, because making a pass for someone who's never been in a race car, a 10-second quarter mile pass is going to provide them the thrill that I get from a 5-second pass, because they don't have the frame of reference. And I think it's similar here, where nobody's married to like, oh, it's a world record, you know, recognized internationally. It's more like, dude, that guy just set his personal best. And I know that feeling, I've experienced it myself.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, everybody, I think that's what you do a lot of times when you talk about the World Series of Pro Mod, right? Like you make sure that there's nothing on the property that's going to top your big dogs, right? I mean, you were adamant about that last year. So,
oh, yeah.
So the perspective, you know, like you were saying with the speed and going, you know, someone can go slower, but have a different feeling about it. I think that's a great way to have a show, you know, is to, I don't even know where I'm going with that. You know, it's just the.
No, I get here's
you know what I'm saying. I mean,
like, this is like a mashup of the JT's. Just like, well, you guys know what I'm saying,
yeah,
right? And we do. Yeah. We always know what you're saying, unless you're 72 rum cocktails in, and then it gets a little hard to understand.
He's still recovering from Sunday. You got to give him credit.
Yeah, you're doing good, man. You look good. You look healthy. So I'm happy, man.
And it was really rough.
It's really rough. Listen, the thing that I'm like, the overall thing is,
there we go.
Oh, look at this. We got fireworks going off on JT's screen. I have no idea what's happening here. I've lost control. But the thing that is screaming to me is that you use different tools for different jobs. And like, I think where I'm going with all this is, I think that your music festival versus concert analogy is really strong, is that like, you may be you go to a concert for like a singular experience. It's focused, right? And the Lollapalooza, Woodstock, that type of stuff, the festivals, that's a whole different deal. It's a culture, right? That's more community driven. It's more for the hardcores. And I think what we do in drag racing, or what I've seen, this is just my perspective, but 50, 60 years of using the same tool for various jobs, right? Like, hey, this is how we do it. We roll out, we race all day. We get as many cars here as possible. And this is the tool we're going to use, you know, for every job. Well, to grow the sport and to generate new fans, we have to use a different tool. That's not to say there's not a place for this tool. Like, you don't throw your hammer away when you buy a nail gun. You're still going to need a hammer sometimes, right? And I think that what I see happening is the opportunity to use different tools to do different things. I think that we've got to foster growth in our community and keep people, nurture it over time. And that's what those big events do. I think of the US Nationals, Donald Long's events, where there's 400 or 500 cars there, PDRA races, that's a community. And those things absolutely have to continue to grow. And they have to work to manage that, to balance that, because you can't, you could completely commit to the community and forego the fan experience, right? Because I think that there's a place for that in our sport. I've thought about doing racer-centric events that don't involve fans whatsoever, you know, and do it as more of a private party type of thing. I think that could be done, but that's a tool to serve a different purpose, right? And I think that that's what I hope the sport's eyes are opening up to, is that there's different ways to do this and there's room for them all. Like, and the ones that work will work. The market will speak and they'll continue. And to your point, Mike, about records, my big takeaway and a lot of the conversations that I've had over the course of the last week now have been centered around, you know, now what? Right now, we've seen Mark Mickey make this Hail Mary run with Jose Gonzalez behind the wheel of his Camaro right at the end of 2023, kind of get this whole thing stirred back up. A couple of months later, we see Todd Moyer, the shot heard round the world, 514, 280 some miles an hour, historic happening. We also see Jason Scruggs crack off a mid 340. Todd Moyer do the same, of 345 in a turbo car. And now I'm hearing return of Pro Extreme. We got to bring back, we need to have, I mean, I literally had track promoter calling after track promoter or track owner calling last week going, let's do a race, no rules, run what you brung. And it's like, guys, we've been down this road before. So I posed the question.
It was cool, though.
It was cool. But I'm just curious of like, what do you see happening? Because I've got some insight on things that I know are happening, but like, what do you think? What do you see the next couple of months looking like, or like the foreseeable future? Because we've got this Donald Long event, the Race for the Record. So now there's a significant carrot hanging out there for the Door Slammer record. We've had our eyes collectively open to the possibilities, right? We saw the record broken by 0.2 seconds, unbelievable. Right. What do you think the immediate future looks like? Do you think we're going to have somebody, I can just see an 8th mile racetrack. I could name a dozen of them right now that I can just imagine putting on some sort of run what you brung, no holds barred, big money thing. Where do you see this unlimited Door Slammer situation headed, Mike?
I think in the near term, it's going to be back to business as usual just because of the weather. So it's going to be back to racing, back to competition. And the long ball hitting is really for the first of the year and the end of the year. So maybe at the end of the year, we'll see something. But once we get like out of March, I think that stuff's over and it's time to get down to business. You're chasing points, you're chasing series. To me, it's interesting to think about how these events, these test sessions that we usually have at the end of the year and the beginning of the year, usually everybody just came down there legal. You didn't see this kind of stuff that Todd Moyer and Jose and Mark Mickey did. And now they're almost using it as like a dual purpose thing. Obviously they're going into race day, but then using it for trying to set these records. And I Donald Long hates that because that's the number one beef he's got against all of these events is that, oh, hey, who's that waving at me here? JT's got somebody. Oh, there we go. Oh, Caroline. Hey, look, yeah. Caroline's making her Drag Illustrated debut.
Yeah.
You called Drag Illustrated.
This is who you talk to when you call Drag Illustrated.
So yeah. That's right. Finally putting a face Caroline. With the name.
There's thousands of people that have talked to her that are probably
seen more people have talked to her than they've talked
the first
to
time.
I couldn't see who it was because of the little icon down there. But anyway, the way these guys are using these events has changed. And so I think we'll see some more of that as we get to the beginning and end of the year. But in the middle of the year, it's back to business as usual, in my opinion.
Yeah, because they can't afford to tear something up and
or change it up and, get out in left field, changing setups and whatnot. Yep. So, has there been a date established for this Race for the Record event? I'm assuming.
To I haven't point, seen
Mike.
It.
Okay, because
and that's Donald's big beef. If you go on Facebook, as soon as Todd Moyer did his run and any of these, oh boy, another testing record. He wants to see it happen at an actual during an event. And so there is some gray area there. Maybe he's got a point. I would love to see it happen during sanctioned events. So maybe these guys that are calling you, these promoters or these track owners that want to do that, maybe it speaks to that they want to see this happen during an actual event and rather than some pre-season or pre-event testing. I mean, what's your take on that? Do you think there's any validity to that or can we just lump them all together, whether it's testing or at an event?
I think we've lumped them in for a long time here at Drag Illustrated via the top eight that's been in the back of the magazine essentially since the beginning. And it's not a blind process. I think it's nuanced. Their context matters. I think there's situations where you'd have a run happen and there are we have insight onto tracks that supposedly have hot clocks or places where there's notorious timing issues. I feel like we're sensitive to those type of things, but I mean, I guess for me, like no matter what, when that run happened, it's going to be the record. I mean, everybody, I mean, I think we have some of that despair, like look at the Mountain Motor Pro Stock record. I mean, there's been a car in the threes, a 399 with a two, right? Jeff Dobbins made that run years ago, and it's still not recognized as the record because it happened in testing. And I think it's created like a little air of confusion around it because like
it is kind of confusing.
Well, right? Is there a difference?
Does it count or doesn't count? You know, like it has to be backed up. Yeah. Does it not have to be backed up?
Because correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not 100% clear on it, but wasn't Dobbins' run during just a complete test session, not like a pre-event test?
No, I think it happened pre-event at VMP, like before the whatever finals or whatever.
Because that's what these guys are doing. They're doing it at day or two before an actual event. So to me, that's a little bit different than just I rented the track and I went and tested that day. That to me probably would be where I would draw the line. But really, with all of these places, especially these smaller tracks, and the deal I talked about earlier with Bob Brockmeyer. That's why I think it's important to have someone like him come in and give your track a tune up and keep your clocks and your timing system up to snuff. Not saying that anyone isn't doing that, but I think it's super smart on behalf of Pro to come in and make sure that all that stuff is up to snuff before this event next week. Because like, what if we do all this and have all these conditions in this track and we go down there and run and make some awesome runs. And then, oh, well, you know, the last time that CompuLink was down there was 1993 or whatever, and then it starts to throw, you know, shade at any performances down there. There's so much that goes into it though. Like who keeps up with that? How do you keep track of how up to date and like certified the time?
And I'm telling you, dude,
there's so much to it.
Well, but it all goes back to how we started the show. And I don't want to move off this topic because there's some more I'd like to share around the future of drag racing as it relates to 300 mile per hour door slammers. But it all goes back to raising the standard across the board. Mm-hmm. Like we talked about it with Tony Stewart. When Tony Stewart came into drag racing, there was a standard that was raised as far as press and promotion is concerned. I mean, I think we've seen multiple teams bring on videographers full time, bring on social media reps full time, bring on publicists full time, because they recognize that this is, we've seen an elevation here. The expectation is different. The new standard has been set and we have to match that. And I think that that goes back to all the kind of underlying or maybe actually overarching theme of everything that we do here at Drag Illustrated is to raise the accepted standard. And I think that that includes how tracks manage their equipment, because I think that that is something that there's not been a precedent set. It's every track's different. And like you said, we bought a timing system. I mean, I tried to buy a timing system from Heartland Park Topeka during their auction just because I wanted to have the stuff, right? I mean, that equipment will end up at a brand new racetrack somewhere. They just built a brand new racetrack, but they bought an old timing system from HPT when they closed down at an auction that had been in a dumpster out back for 6 months, right? I mean, that we have to raise the standard. That's what this all is. I mean, it's a raising of the standard across the board. I mean, I think about the work we do with Flow Racing, right? We're raising the standard of their relationships with promoters, right? I mean, we're creating a new standard, and this is now the accepted format. And I think that type of thing happens at the top. Like, there has to be an example set by someone. This is how we're going to do it. This is the level of attention and care that we're going to take. And that's what I'm proud of. Like, I'm proud to be able to promote the fact that CompuLink's coming down to essentially certify and check over the timing system at Bradenton Motorsports Park to ensure that we don't have any issues and that the competition is of high integrity. But even more, and this is one of the nuances that some fans may not understand, this is relatively interesting to even me, that the concussion and like just the vibration that's caused by nitro cars on the starting line is very taxing on a timing system. So you have to be mindful of all of that. And I mean, I've heard multiple track owners tell me that like they had funny cars or top fuel cars take out their Christmas tree with a single pair. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that that go into all this. But anyways, I sense a raising of the standard, Mike. That's what I'm seeing.
Can we just make our second chance race at World Series of Pro Mod, just make it extreme, just no rules.
Give us no ideas.
Yeah, there you go. No ideas.
Well, and that brings me to my next point regarding 300 mile per hour door cars. And I mean, I think kind of the theme of this show today is just the change and being a catalyst for change and what comes in the future. And I had a really interesting conversation this morning with a high level crew chief in the pro modified space, and we were talking about the significance of Todd Moyer's 5 second, low 5 second run is 5:14 this past week at Bradenton Motorsports Park. And the fact that it was an early shutoff run, I mean, Mike, all indications are that if that car would have made a full pull, if he would have kept the throttle open through the finish line, that it would have been a 508, 509 exceeding 290 miles an hour. I've been told today 292 is what they expect it would have run. And from what I understand, that's with a considerable amount left on the table, like power to go, which is massively impressive just across the board. But like some of the conversations that we had were safety components. You know, the windshield started to collapse.
Yeah, we didn't even know that when we were discussing it last week, because it had just happened right before we came on the air. So we didn't have all that information, but I did hear Todd talking about that.
So the windshield. So, I mean, they were talking about, you know, using quarter inch Lexan instead of eighth inch, putting in an additional brace down the center of the windshield. And they, you know, and there are things they don't know. They may be a mile per hour away from the front end collapsing. They don't know.
Well, Todd talked about that car, I believe, was like a 2015 car, and he's got a new one on the way. And he said basically that they're going to wait till they get that car to really start making those changes, like what you said, because just the wear and tear on the chassis, and just the, you know, safety updates or whatever's, I think they've updated that car and you know, bolstered it, but just that he wants, before he goes that fast again, he wants to be in his new car. So that was very interesting to hear him say that also.
It speaks to the safety in the realization of what's happening here. By all accounts, that car was roughly 2,450 pounds when it made that run, and that, which is fantastic. You know, all things considered, that many of these cars are in excess of 2,600 or over 2,700 pounds. But it does kind of, it makes you, opens your eyes about like, hey, these guys aren't even potentially willing to attempt this again. Says a lot about how I don't know that there's necessarily room in our sport right now for competing with these type of cars. Cause I mean, I think the cry for Pro Extreme or an Outlaw Run What You Brung quarter mile deal kind of overlooks the fact that this is a super sketchy deal that we are actually seeing drivers that are very accomplished opt out of Mark Mickey, you know, opt out of making that attempt, when it could have very easily been his name attached, you know, to the driver line there on that world record attempt. I don't know, man. I think that what it does open my eyes to is, I guess, the effortless nature, it seemed, that Carl Stevens and Todd Moyer achieved that. I mean, they hot lapped that car. Right. Like this wasn't something that was done with shooting pistons through the hood. And I guess I'm just curious, kind of carrying on that conversation about this, the potential of routine cars running these type of numbers routinely. I mean, dare I say it, like, is the door swung wide open for a Top Fuel / Funny Car replacement in quarter mile pro modified? I mean, do you really need? You know what I mean? Like, I think that it creates a possibility of a totally different world, because a lot of the things that we're trying to avoid, 350 and these cars going so fast, the tires are coming apart and all these different things. If there's all this talk about how can we slow them down, where like 300 is the number. And that's, hey man, we've got that brewing right here with Pro Modified. I mean, is that not worth pursuing, like in a developmental capacity, like on the NHRA front?
I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting thought. I've never really considered that. I think so much of Top Fuel and Funny Car is about the spectacle and the noise and the, you know, 8-foot header flames and just the everything that goes along with it. If you've never experienced it in person, especially, to me, it's like we talked about last week, it encroaches more on Top Alcohol Funny Car and Top Alcohol Dragster. It kind of makes those guys like, hey, what are you guys doing with those cars? Because they're right in their wheelhouse now. And in all fairness though, cause I saw a bunch of comments and comparisons of Top Alcohol to Pro Mod. Those guys do have rules that they're working within and, are constrained by. And I saw a couple of guys that run those type of cars pipe up that, hey, if we're allowed to go out there with no rules, you know, we'll change those numbers pretty quickly. Which kind of brings another interesting conversation of like, okay, well, like what would it take to do an Outlaw Top Alcohol Dragster or Top Alcohol Funny Car? And what would they run? So it does kind of start to open the can of worms of, because we've moved into an era of drag racing, especially in Pro Mod, which we're so familiar with, of everything's legal. You used to have outlaw cars. Everybody was building crazy light cars with top secret stealth bomber paint and, you know, magnesium this and titanium that and everything crazy. And then it just all of a sudden it went back to, even at the, you know, outlaw races, those cars are essentially NHRA legal minus maybe a couple small changes. But now here we are kind of swinging that pendulum back the other way. And what effect does that have on those other classes? Would they be interested in doing something like that? So I don't know. As far as a replacement for Top Fuel Funny Car, I think just from a pure spectacle, there's no replacement for those at the moment.
I can't argue. I mean, I think it just to me, it opens at least my mind to the possibility of there being, because I say this a lot, and we're doing our work here to change this, and I'm hopeful that it can be changed, but we're staring down the barrel of, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. I think the eight car fields are very possible for the future of the NHRA and Top Fuel and Funny Car at some point. You just look at the way things are. I think that that's a real potential.
That's an interesting thing that we're going to have, you know, at the Pro Superstar Shootout also, is all of a sudden you're going to have a surplus of hitters down there. We're going to be sending some really good cars home. And that really hasn't happened on a regular basis at NHRA for quite a while. I did actually listen to Brian Lone's, I think he did like a live show on Facebook a couple weeks ago, and just talking about car counts, projected car counts in the Nitro ranks, especially Top Fuel, And they are going to get back to where there's going to be a handful of good cars going home every event. They, you know, they project 20 plus, maybe 20 to 23 cars at some events in Top Fuel. But for the last few years, it's been, hey, if you've got one of these things, bring it and you'll qualify. But when you go to an eight car field, it just dramatically changes everything. And we're going to have some really, really top hitters, champions, former champions on the outside looking in at this event. And I think you have to kind of be willing to ask yourself, are you willing to go that route? Because there's a lot of these teams in NHRA that if all of a sudden they went to eight cars, they'd be facing that obstacle of, we worked so hard for so long to build our car count, and then we got, I don't know, 14 great cars, but now we're going to go to eight cars and send six good cars home. But again, that creates that scarcity, and it creates that, you may even see more guys build cars and want to come out and run just to see if they can make that now more stringent eight car cut. It's a weird thing. Human beings are weird creatures, and
that we are, man.
Yeah, and that is the kind of like mindset that I think you could see. It's unexpected, but it's like a reverse psychology type of thing.
It really is, and I've seen it happen dozens and dozens of times, like with personal, you know, business ventures and whatnot. Everybody wants what no one else has, and I think that especially at the highest levels of our sport, anything that smacks professional drag racing, I think that we've got to continue to trend towards not booked in shows, but kind of the premise of a booked in show. I mean, one of the things that I think is, you know, kind of weighing on me or that I think about a lot is that, you know, I put myself in the shoes of track owners a lot. And I think about how I would feel in certain situations. And one of them is, you know, not being insured, you know, a full field. For those categories that I'm massively invested in and having a real like understanding of how that is or what's going into that. Because I think that we're at a point in time, expectation wise, where people expect a lot and they expect a lot of questions answered. They expect a lot of information and you have to deliver. And I think that, you know, the days of these track operators rolling into these events, you know, with their fingers crossed as far as their show is concerned, I think those will soon go the way of the dodo. What people want to know, known commodities, man, right? I mean, it's like, and I think that is something that we're seeing happen and will continue to see happen. And it's driven by scarcity, but it also is a tool that allows promoters to have much more control and have a much more surefire product for their fans. I really think and I don't necessarily want to see the NHRA go to an eight car field. I just saw a comment here and I don't think that's the answer. I'm just saying that I think the fans expect to know who's coming. And I think that there's certain expectations that need to be met.
Yep. And someone in here quick is asking, are we talking about 300 mile per hour door cars in the 1,000 foot or quarter? We're talking about quarter mile, which is an interesting thought also. I mean, back to your point about, could it be a Top Fuel funny car replacement? That is the one thing that is better, in my opinion, about Pro Mod and about every other class except the fuel cars is that they're still running quarter mile. And it would allow you to possibly get back to that, if only temporarily. Up, and then all of a sudden, that we're running those cars 1,000 foot.
I mean, could drag racing's car of tomorrow be a Pro Mod? I'm just saying. Like, I know this is a crazy notion, but like NASCAR, like, had to take steps towards, you know, ensuring close competition, blah 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 blah, all these things. So they create the car of tomorrow. And I guess I just sit here and I go, okay. I've been told still to this day, NHRA receives hate mail and frustration from fans over the move from a quarter mile to 1,000 feet. And I guess I just see this and I go, okay, you could develop the car of tomorrow. This is existing technology, right? We've seen this done. And all these teams over the course of time start testing their new Pro Mod, right? And I mean, I'm just saying running a quarter mile. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying if you're really looking at, because the other nuance is just dealing with nitromethane. Mm-hmm. Like I think about that a lot. I've gotten a massive education on the nuances of dealing with nitromethane during the course of the last 8 months. And I mean, like I'm afraid to say it again on this show right now is how much I've learned about it. And it's, that to me is a potential roadblock at some point in the future where you're going, what if there comes a day when we can't, when header flames, we can't pull off, you know what I mean? Like I'm just, and like I said,
I got
I'm just talking about long-term future. You know what I mean? Like we talked about the last 70 years all the time. I want to talk about the next.
Do you think that the casual fan or maybe someone that just goes to the track, they don't realize the restrictions that each class is under? I don't think. I mean, once you're a fan, I think you do.
Yeah.
But if you're there, you're thinking, all right, that son of a bitch is the fastest right there.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's what they're thinking.
You've got like your mainstream fan and then you've got your hardcore fan. Your hardcore fan knows
for like sure.
Pro mod versus pro stock versus whatever.
But even in those classes, to know the restrictions that they try to keep them all together. Because I know that, you know, NASCAR, of course, went through all that. But, you just think about it in other sports. Like, you're left-handed. You can, it's been proven that you're in UFC, Wes. You know, it's been, these lefties have been dominating here lately. So you can only throw 5 left hooks around. you'd be like, what? if you're a fan of it, you're like, no.
Why is that guy doing
son
that?
Of a bitch? Win.
You have to have some understanding to appreciate anything. But I do think that goes back to the spectacle. That's why Nitro, Funny Car, and Top Fuel are so appealing because they are virtually in our minds or to the average fan unrestricted and the fastest and the craziest. And that's why the average fan will show up,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The average fan that doesn't care too much about drag racing 364 days a year is going to whatever track when Nitro rolls in, just because it's not as hard to understand and they're just crazy. Whereas you really got to be pretty hardcore to go to, US Street Nationals and understand the difference of what's going on there. And, these more nuanced events, there's definitely even like football is that way to me. The average football fan, it's a complex sport and you have to understand it to some degree to have an appreciation of it. Otherwise it's just like, oh man, I hope that dude gets his head knocked off when the guy tackles him. It's just more like, barbaric or whatever.
I agree. I mean, and I think honestly, I look back and I think about one of the driving forces of the popularity of Pro Mod, and I think why there is this like crazy cult-like following for Pro Modified. And I think it goes back to the violence that's still on display by these cars. I mean, I think short of
while being Top Fuel
and Funny Car, while still looking like Hot Wheels on steroids, you know what I mean? They have that they're violent, and that really. It translates for whatever reason. And I mean, honestly, I think that's part of the thing that I don't like about like radial racing is the way the cars are run so differently that they lose a lot of that violence. That is a big part of the draw. I mean, it needs to be visibly compelling. Like, holy shit, that thing's about to flip over. It's crooked. I mean, that visual violence and chaos is, I see some of these radial cars make these incredible runs. Like this past weekend at the US Street Nationals, and perhaps this is a good segue to talk a little bit about US Streets, but I mean, these things are on a rail, Mike. You know what I mean? Like these things barely wiggle. And and if they do spin the tire even a little bit, it's immediately up in smoke. I mean, we see a little every once in a while, the slow shake from them, but I mean, it's such a different visual experience, no less impressive, don't get me wrong, but like, do you agree with what I'm saying?
Like, because it hooks and it's gone, and if it doesn't, then it's aborted and we see the tractor come back out again.
I didn't watch any rate. I used that for my bathroom breaks while on flow.
Oh,
Shots fired. Yeah. Shots fired. Yeah. Oh, man. I actually like it, man. I think we need probably a touch more of that.
Honestly, it's hard to do that, though, like the switch from radio to Big Tire, doing that track prep switch. And I want to give a shout out to Wade Rich and everybody that's done that. I know Tyler Crossnow and his group, his crew have done that at VMP. We even competed in one of those. And I can remember on our way to the event, I found out I was sitting in the passenger seat with my dad's driving the rig, and I find out radials are going to be there. And I'm like starting to question. I'm like, what? We're going to a race where radials are going to be competing along with Big Tire cars. And I had kind of like had to call and do some serious research about this to figure out if we were going to even be able to get down the track just because of the difference in track prep. And it actually worked out to be
awesome. What'd your dad say?
Well, I looked over at him. I said, "Hey, Dad, they're running radials at this deal too." And they're telling me, they're going to switch back and forth from radio prep to slick prep. That's the plan. He just looked at me like, "Are you fucking serious?" Like, yeah, he literally did start looking for the next exit to U-turn that bad boy. But I think that was like one of the first times it had been done, and now it's done pretty frequently, and we don't bat an eye at it. So I wanted to give a tip of the cap to the track crew down there.
Oh, listen to this. Selena's saying she used ProMod for bathroom breaks. I was watching Ultra Street. Well, she's off the team, so it's been real. It's been real.
I did watch our boy Alex Hayes. Oh, yeah. But man, and I didn't realize there were so many Calypso.
Calypso green Mustangs.
Dude, I was like, oh, look, there he is. No, that's not him. Oh, there it is. And then
I know there's a bunch, right? By side.
There were like five or six of them. So I don't know. Somebody needs to like trademark that, and the rest of you guys need to get a repaint.
That's a top five car color of all time.
Yeah, Wes loves it.
I love that color, man. It's,
I think Alex's was the only one with a hood scoop. So that's how I identified it.
Yeah. What I was going to, so we got to cover a bunch of stuff here in a relatively short amount of time, but let's talk a little bit about Sick Week. Have you guys been following along with Tom Bailey's big production? I shot him a text on Monday and said, "Hey man, good luck this week." And what an event. I mean, it's so funny to hear.
We should have went to that too. Just rolled right into it.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't.
I wanted to, and I've told you guys personally, like if I'm going racing next year, like that's the event I want to race. But how about the Ascension from this event? I mean, what is this, the third one or second, third one?
No, it'd be
third.
No, right? It's at least third. It may be more than that.
I mean, dude, this has gone from, I mean, it's widely hailed as the Super Bowl of Drag and Drive. Like
we were at the second one, right?
Yeah, we were at the second one. So this is the third.
And we missed last year. So this is the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Okay, my bad. So, but still, that is a rapid, I mean, it was Lights Out 7 that put Donald Long on the map, right? 7 years into that process. Most of the time that these things take years and years and years, and I guess I'm just blown away by how rapidly this thing has taken hold.
Yeah. It's so cool to watch.
Daryl Jackson saying Sick Week is Radio Fest, and I don't know. There's something different about it. Obviously, all the off-track stuff. The tough part about Sick Week is like your favorite car or two or all of them are out by like the second day. Like Cletus is out. I saw him post that. I believe it was yesterday. But all your top running cars and guys that are trying to set those records, man, I think for the first couple of years they were able to make it through. But I think they're pushing them hard. We've seen some bad luck, some attrition, and we saw Schroeder go out. Super first day when we were down there, a lot of those heavy hitters go out early. That's really the shame of the deal, but it's a battle, and you get guys that, hey, may not have the quickest car, man, but are able to survive that attrition, and it really is a whole different deal. But I don't mind that being a radio fest.
Yeah, I think what I'm seeing is the man, it goes Bennett's. I don't know why this is like a recurring theme, but I think that we're going to see an expectation or a standard being raised in that these guys are racing so much more frequently than they used to race, that I think we're going to see an elevation or a maturation process in terms of the maintenance that they do on their cars between races. Because if you think about it, I mean, a lot of these guys that had purpose-built drag and drive cars may hit the local test and tune, but they kind of were focusing all their energy on Hot Rod Drag Week, the singular drag and drive event that happened during the season. Well, now there's, you know, Sick Week. There's Rocky Mountain Race Week. There's, I mean, there's a slew of these things happening. There's the Summit group in Ohio. I mean, there's a multitude of places to race these cars, and a lot of these guys are using them. Like, well, hell, this event, we're driving through the wilderness on the West Coast, and this event, we're going to drive through the Sahara Desert, and this event, and it's a fantastic thing, but we're seeing these cars probably seeing a duty cycle that they've never seen before. And I think that the combination of those two things is problematic. I mean, you're going to have an increased level of attrition until the yin matches the yang there. Because, I mean, the other factor besides like saturation and burning people out is, you know, this, can people actually do it? Like, can you meet the demand? Because, I mean, that's kind of what I'm seeing, like reading between the lines and talking to some of the people that I have, is that it's like, okay, we've got a, there's going to be a newfound appreciation for maintenance, because, you know, running it all year and going to 10 Dragon Drives, I mean, you're probably going to need to freshen it up over the off season. You know,
it has helped though, the longevity of these motors and the power adders, I guess you'd say as well, you know, that you can make type of horsepower.
Technology.
I mean, oh my God. It's came so far in the past, you know, what, 10, 15, 20 years, 20 years for sure. Came so far. That, you know, you can have all this horsepower and still have the air blowing going down the road. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's just nuts. That is crazy. You know? That's something I wanted to mention when we were talking about Todd Moyer. The one thing that you said, they didn't shoot a piston out through it or break a rod or anything, but they did burn up every transmission that they had. And supposedly they had four transmissions in the trailer. So whatever they're doing and how hard they're running that deal, you know, turbo combination is not easy on transmissions anyway. We remember our buddy Ricky Smith talking about melting the snow cone when he was staging up against Troy Coughlin when he had that turbo vet. That all is the thing.
Drag racing.
Yeah, I'm zagging right back to, can we have competitive long ball hitting racing or outlaw, you know, pro extreme type racing? That may be the weak point that we find with those, or it may foster new innovation on that front. But it seems to be the one thing that they're, you know, burning through in that combination, running the quarter mile. So, but on the counterpoint to that, the transmission durability is something we see on Sick Week. That, to your point, JT, has come such a long way and has allowed these guys to drive it down the street, but then, you know, just basically swap tires and tune up and go make a pass at Sick Week or Drag Week or what have you.
It's mind blowing.
It really is. I mean, I mean, I guess you saw it coming. And let's talk about technology changes. So one of the things, and let's touch on this, the US Street Nationals and Outlaw Pro Modified, a longtime Drag Illustrated advertiser, one of our dear friends, Jefferson City, Missouri's own Mark Mickey takes the win, and Outlaw Pro Mod scores a $32,000 victory down at Bradenton Motorsports Park, taking out his good friend and fellow WSOPM invitee Ken Cartuccio in the final. Mark Mickey really stole the show, Mike. I mean, qualified number one, 357, 220 plus, carried that through eliminations, a dominating performance. The car was on rails all week long. In the post-race report, Nate Van Wagnen, our editor-in-chief at Drag Illustrated, put together for dragillustrated.com. It was great listening or reading Mark's quotes. I mean, hearing him talk about his team and really giving them a lot of the effort because of how good the car was. I mean, I guess let's ask the question. I mean, is this the beginning of turbo cars to the front? I mean, we're all these world records. Maybe it's already decided, but we have seen that combination really go away almost entirely in NHRA Pro Mod, but largely go away across the board. I mean, a few years ago, I would have told you that we're soon to be overrun by twin turbo Hemis and Pro Modified, and flat hoods abound, and all the cars are going to be quiet. But then I was completely wrong, and those cars went away. And there was a lot that contributed to that, primarily the rules. But I guess I just ask, I mean, are we going to see a mass movement back to the turbo combination? And I would like to talk about some of the technology that's driving these rapid advancements in those race cars.
I'm not sure. This question came up on Shaky Bake last night, and Lyle Barnett was pretty much the last guy to have any success in NHRA Pro Mod with a turbo combination. And he even said after that, he thought you might start to see some more people take up that combo in NHRA Pro Mod. And with Mark's success, down there at Bradenton? Are we going to see more and more people run that combo? And they actually had Mark on talking about it. And I think he was saying that basically it's still a tough combination to run. It's gotten a little more under control, but it's still a tough combo. And it's something that not a lot of people have experience with. And that's maybe what's holding it back at this point. Also, have you, Wes, told Mark that he's got to weigh 3,200 pounds at World Series of Pro Mod yet? That may.
I was waiting until after the show.
Yeah, that may change it a little bit too.
Yeah,
Once we call Mark and break that news to him.
Well, I mean, and there's a comment here that's referencing the e-gate. And for those that don't know, that this is an electronically controlled waste gate that is being used by the top Pro Mod turbo teams. And it allows for much better control of boost levels and power management, specifically on the starting line. And that's driving these massive improvements we've seen in 60-foot times from turbo cars. That was always kind of the argument that the turbo cars couldn't run as well as supercharged or nitrous cars down low. And that was kind of forever the reason the rules a lot of times were the way they were with the turbo cars being able to make a tremendous amount of power. It was because they needed it to make up that ET the rest of the way down the racetrack that they lose from 0 to 60 feet. We've seen that nullified via technology. This electronic wastegate is an epic game changer. It doesn't have a boost reference. It's allows for precision control and of boost levels on the starting line and throughout the course of a run. So I guess I'm just saying, like, will that alone, is that to, and we're also seeing all sorts of torque converter technology, fluid manipulation. There's a lot happening around these type of things. And I guess I'm just going, I mean, I'm with Lyle Barnett. I mean, I think we're going to see some guys go, that's the way that I want to race. And if I have the opportunity to go back to it, I think we'll see it. I mean, I don't know that a lot of these teams have the resources to make those kind of wholesale changes, but I think anybody that's got a car on the jig or is looking at the future is probably being tempted to go over to the dark side right now.
Yeah, but there's so many cycles with this deal.
Yeah,
we've seen it. How many guys have switched from turbo to pro charger? And then how many guys have we seen now switch from pro charger to screw blown? And there's always this cycle, except for my nitrous guys who don't change, and we love them for that. And someone actually said, oh, Bruce Barth said nitrous is dead. We're going to do our best to make sure it's not dead at World Series or Pro Mod. We've got, how many do we have, Wes?
12.
10 to 12 nitrous cars coming, more than you've seen at Snowbirds or US Street. And we've gotten to see both of these events play out, see how the rules possibly need to be adjusted and what we can do for each of these combinations. Our goal is to make sure that we have parity across the board, across all of these combinations, across all of the boosted combinations, and then whatever we can do to help the nitrous cars be competitive. So that's the task that we're actually having this week. We're getting tons of messages and getting blown up about the rules for World Series of Pro Mod now that US Street's behind us and the performances that we're seeing out of Mark and Todd Moyer. So it's definitely made that more interesting. It was easier to make the rule changes last year for World Series of Pro Mod without this this sort of cropping its head up. And
I mean, I felt like the turbocharged combo had kind of become experimental again.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I remember when they hardly had rules on turbo cars because it just didn't really matter. Like, they might run good once, but you more than likely wouldn't see it again. So it never really factored into the equation. I guess I just see that those days are over. I mean, that was literally how we looked at turbo cars at the World Series last year. Like, I knew those cars were capable of being fast, and we'd seen, you know, what Mark Wardenhausen had done. We knew it was potential, but it just, we felt like they lacked the quantity. They didn't have the inventory of cars to rapidly get back to where they once were. And they're here now. I mean, they're here now. And it cannot be looked at as an experimental combination at all. And it's a tough deal. And it's an extremely hard thing to balance because it flies directly in the face of everything we were talking about at the beginning of the show. And like the personal satisfaction and kind of universal appreciation that comes with these record setting runs. So we know that's a driving force, but I think that that's where you have to use other tools right? And other ways to put the onus on something else. Like at the World Series of Pro Mod, it's prestige, it's honor, it's big money, it's all these things, it's all these people watching, it's this moment in time. So we've made it less about the personal conquest and like how we know that we're operating within a confined rule set, because some of the questions that I'm getting is like, what do you do? If you can't speed the nitrous cars up, you are challenged with perpetually slowing down the other combinations. But I guess I'm just okay with that. Maybe, and maybe I'm wrong, Mike, but I think that those are the type of things that's heavy as the head.
Yeah,
I mean, no, you have to keep it. The combination of cars is one of the ingredients that make ProMod what it is. And I mean, clearly, we can barely keep out Top Alcohol Funny Car afloat right now. So I don't think we want to see all flat hood pro mods. I don't think we want to see all screw blown pro mods. I think that the diversity of cars is a contributing part of the storyline. So yeah, I think whatever has sport, to be done.
It's where the class originated from. Like you and I were talking yesterday. You've got guys that went the blown route from day one and kind of borrowed technology and everything from Alcohol Funny Car. You got guys that kind of came from the naturally aspirated pro stock type of approach to these cars, and sort of that's where the nitrous approach came from. And that to me is the battle of those, is where all of this popularity stemmed from and continues to stem from. I think nitrous cars are still a huge fan favorite. They are here in this neck of the woods, as always, and I think that spans for most of the country. There's nothing you do with nitrous cars. You can't get them light enough. And that may be true, but for the time being, we've got to continue to try to bring parity with all of the, we got to have parity amongst all of the boosted combinations. Then we've got to bring those guys back just a tad to give these nitrous guys more of a shot, especially if we're going to invite 10 or 12 of them down there. We can't just have them come down there and, you know, hey, enjoy your barbecue and have fun and not give them a shot at this deal. So it has to be a level playing field. It has to be more about side-by-side competition, and it has to be more about representing all of the power adders that make ProMod what it is. So I think these guys kind of get that out of their system at Snowbirds, at US Street. The weather conditions are probably even more favorable in December and January than typically get in March. It's starting to get a little bit warm. I think all of those things work toward it making sense for World Series to represent a little bit of a departure from what they may do at the other outlaw races. And it's not an easy task. And I think the rule set last year was spot on and was a huge factor in the success and the feedback we got from the event of just the on-track performance. And every racer, fan, anybody that attended seemed to kind of have the same feedback. And I do believe a lot of that came from having a great rule set. Thanks to John Sears, Lonnie Grimm, our whole team, Vic, yourself, myself, you know, worked hard on making that rule set, and we're tasked with doing that again. So now that US Street's over, that's what everyone wants to see. And we're going to have that out here within the next 24 hours or so. And we'll see what kind of feedback we get from there.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's for me, I think that I want to see, I want to be able to say that I did everything I possibly could to keep pro modified for as long as humanly possible. And I think pro modified is part of the fabric of its DNA, is this eclectic group of cars. And the drivers are an important part of it. But I was saying this to Vic Alvarez earlier today. We were chatting, and I spoke on. We're in a position like in our life cycle with World Series of Pro Mod specifically, which is in its relative infancy. This will be the fifth running of the World Series of Pro Mod coming up in a little over 30 days, but it's to go where we want to go. Like, you need star power, right? So we're developing stars, and we have stars. I mean, there are stars that exist in our space right now. I think Lyle Barnett is a bona fide star. I think Stevie Jackson has identified himself as a bona fide star. Melanie Salemi has a significant fan base. The list goes on. Jason Harris, rapidly developing fan base. Spencer Hyde is by large part his success at World Series last year has become a star in our space. But you, until you have a plethora of them and you kind of made the effort and required worth it, you need those cars to be a part of the show, right? Like I talk all the time where the cars are not the stars. They're not, but they're at this moment in time, they're a seriously contributing co-star. Do you know what I'm saying? Like we're in a position where we can lean on those cars and the connection that people have with them and the memories associated with them. We can lean on that. And I want to keep doing that for as long as possible. And I know that it may not be the most popular perspective, but this deal has to be about a whole bunch of different race cars meeting up in a singular location to do battle and it be extremely close across them all.
I think it'll be well received. We're not asking huge changes or major expenses of these guys. That's to me is where when you start introducing rule changes, kind of like what we saw with NHRA Pro Mod mid-season, these expensive combination changing changes that you're making in the name of parity, it's a double-edged sword. And a lot of that is very tough on those guys. So yeah, some minor adjustments going into World Series from based on what we've seen out of the data from Snowbirds and US Street and some good sunshine, some Florida Gulf Coast air. And I think it'll be another magical weekend, man.
I think so too, man. Hey, let me pay some bills here real quick. And then let's do we'll close out today's show with a little Q&A. If anybody has any specific questions, we'll riff a little bit about when we're all headed out to Bradenton for the fast approaching pro superstar shootout. But I do want to remind you guys that each and every episode of the West Buck Show is made possible by way of our friends at Stroud Safety. Stroud Safety is known for their top quality racing safety equipment from drag chutes and seatbelts to fire suits and blankets. It's all 100% made in America. Log on to StroudSafety.com today and make sure you tell them we sent you. Guys, when do you roll out, Mike? I think I leave Monday.
I'll get there right before Q1, if that's okay with
fantastic.
You
fantastic. JT, leaving tonight? Leaving tonight?
No, not tonight. What, Saturday morning? Is that right? Yeah.
Probably. We keep bumping JT's departure date up every time we talk.
There, I guess you know.
Every time we had a conference call, we had like a new situation arise, and JT's departure date got bumped up another day.
I know. Now I'm trying to get everything fit into. You know, like you're kind of planning. Okay, get this done here. Get this done here. Get this loaded up. And now you're like, oh shit, I got to leave in just a couple of days.
I'm gonna get us a dedicated race rig. I was looking through some pictures last night from the IndyCar race that I went to in Nashville last year that I've talked about a bunch. But anyways, I took probably 500 photos and I was just going through them. And a friend of mine, Greg Gill, someone I'm getting to know, he is the CEO of SRO, the global road racing deal. And I was looking and I had taken a bunch of pictures from the IndyCar race of their rig. And I mean, it's this big SRO truck and trailer with an awning on it and a deck on it and like tables and chairs, like a legit hospitality and like a control room. And I'm going, all right, we're going to have a Drag Illustrated one of those real quick because I think I thought a lot about buying a little trailer yesterday. And then I'm like,
oh, now we're getting a semi.
I think I want a semi. I think if we're going to do it, we might as well do it.
You know anybody that sells those?
Yeah, I think I want like a semi and like a legit. I mean, I want to be able to put like golf carts in it, 10 radios, a printer, all of our signage. Like, wouldn't it be cool to have a semi set up with like little holsters for all of our signage and like all of our production stuff and like all of our sound equipment and all of that stuff? And it's just in one singular location. And there's probably a business opportunity where we could maybe like rent it to track operators.
Oh, no.
Who need
no,
us
no,
to come
here
in.
We go. No.
Okay. No.
Because then that shit's going to be just trashed when the time
we get yeah, back. We won't rent it to anybody. You Scott, can't loan a trailer.
Scott Malpass wants to know how many classes do we have at Pro and World Series? I think we've got 6 at World Series. I think we've got about the same at Pro, right?
Yes. We have Top Fuel going at it for $250,000. Nitro Funny Car going at it for $250,000. Pro Stock. Our third professional category going at it for $125,000. And then we're going to have Top Sportsman racing for $50,000, Super Stock racing for $30,000, and Stock racing for $30,000. And that will round out our lineup for the Skag Power Equipment Pro Superstar Shootout presented by Johnson's Horsepower Garage. 3 weeks later, the World Series of Pro Mod, of course, headlined by the fifth running of the Drag Illustrator World Series of Pro Mod. We will also have the second annual Mountain Motor Pro Stock Invitational, the inaugural Pro 10-5 Challenge, which has been a real barn burner. Like, people are fired up. We got some big names that we're going to be dropping yet this week. People coming out of the woodwork to slap on those 10-5Ws and go at it for $25,000. We'll also have the inaugural Intercontinental Top Sportsman Championship presented by FTI Performance, as well as the Intercontinental Top Dragster Championship. Both those guys racing and gals racing for $50,000 apiece. And we're also going to have what else? We're going to do Super Pro, right?
Yep.
Yeah, we're going to do a Super Pro race. So anyways, yeah, we got, but like I said, concise shows, small, manageable, where we can create a really killer experience for every one of our racers on the property. That's the thing that's probably the most exciting for me, is I like to be able to have you want a crowd, but you want to be able to have a meaningful interaction with as many of them as possible. And when the numbers get so big, it gets harder and harder and harder, man. But yeah, dude, it's going to be a barn burner, man. It really is.
Barn burner.
Dude, I mean,
I don't drink as much as I used to on this show. Remember?
Yeah.
I used to take a drink every time you'd say,
we used to have an intro for your drinking and everything.
Got to get back to that. After hours, DI after hours. That was, goodness, man. No, I'm fired up, man. I think I feel really good about the way things are going to look. I love the energy from our racers. I love the, you know, we really have. I mean,
how about the ticket sales too? Advanced ticket sales. According to the FOAT and Vic and anybody we're trying to judge this against, advanced ticket sales are off the hook.
Really incredible, man. I mean, and considering everything that there's a lot of drag racing going on in that part of the country. You're trying to do something different, limited resources, right? I mean, we have a strong budget, but this was a mindfully done thing, because so much of this was financed by racers themselves, that it was very important to be mindful of investments. And all things considered, I think that this deal, I mean, it's going to be a sellout capacity crowd both days, Friday and Saturday. And I can't wait to see it, man. I love nothing I like more than a party.
And yep. Daryl, yes.
Pit party.
Yep.
Yep, the Strange Engineering Racer and Crew Welcome Party will go down Thursday night at the World Series of Pro Mod. Super fired up about that. We got DJ Laney Newman, the voice of the Texas Stampede of Speed, that's going to be spinning records.
Off the record.
Off the record. Spinning records. Maybe we should call him DJ Off the Record.
I think that'd be awesome.
Hey, that would be good, right?
Okay. But DJ Off the Record is going to be there spinning records Thursday night, making some music for us. We're going to have some special guests there. It's going to be a lot of fun, man. I think we're in the beginning stages of planning a get together on Wednesday night of World Series of Pro Mod at a local restaurant. So I'm kind of excited about that. Do a little driver meet and greet autograph session, have some good food and go.
Tom Wooden lost a bet to me.
Ooh. Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
On so what?
He's got to wear Chiefs gear on Friday.
Ooh, that's exciting. So he's
never bet against the freaking Chiefs, man. That's doesn't work.
And David, you know, the head of security, he's got to wear a Chiefs hat. So they're throwing him out. They didn't even give me points.
I didn't even lose a bet. And we got the whole fam dressed up in the Mahomes jerseys, T. So that was just for you, buddy.
I was really proud of you.
Yeah. I was proud. I mean, I bet it was a unique experience. I mean, it's been a hot minute since you've worn a Carolina Panthers jersey with like a big smile on your face.
Yeah, I didn't have a smile. And we just wore them just for the photo and took them right back off. Trust me.
I had to tell him for the day.
JT had been asking me about it. And I told Lisa, I said, hey, before this game starts, when this game starts, let's get a picture. Cause JT's been asking me every week, you wearing your jersey?
I know that Mike, he's like a closet Mahomes fan. He just won't admit it.
This is, Quick in the comments is saying, I heard Taylor Swift going to be there. What do you guys make of all this Taylor Swift talk? Swift. Like, because it's kind of, I watched a thing Colin Cowherd on Fox this morning. He said, it was this morning. This was really interesting. He said, statistics prove that during a 3.5 hour playoff broadcast of an NFL football game, there's 18 and a half minutes of actual football. Like, a play taking place, and that they've got the numbers to support that. And
how
he goes,
is that possible when there's more actual?
I guess the amount of time
game.
Before 40 second play clock.
40 second play clock.
The play actually happening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like commercials and everything else. Yeah, I heard this.
And I thought it was really interesting because he's going, if you think you just want, because the argument is like, I don't want to see Taylor Swift. I just want to watch football.
No, and it's a spectacle.
And they go, Colin Cowherd goes, liar. He goes, liar. Liar is what he says. Because it's like, you clearly don't, because you're only watching about 18 minutes of football. You know, and I think it goes back to like where Street Outlaws has done so well with their production, is that if you watch that show and it's a 30-minute episode or whatever, there's like 3 minutes of racing.
You can't have it. That goes back to what we're saying about our show, about World Series of Pro Bowl and everything too. It's in Pro Superstar Shootout, it's everything around it. It's not the on-track action that lasts for 4 seconds. It's all the other stuff, man. In fact, to your point about the NFL, you know, on the NFL Plus thing, you can watch condensed games. JT, have you watched this?
Yeah, I do.
Like,
if
you miss a game, they'll show you basically just every play back to back, and you can watch in like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
but it's horrible. You're like, what am I even watching this? This is, sucks.
It does.
So it is. Even if you're a hardcore football fan or a hardcore fan of your team, you're watching it for the fact that everyone else in the world's watching it and the spectacle, the commercials, all the other
bullshit.
You
don't like the commentator, like, mm-hmm. you still want to hear that play broke down and what happened there? You know, or you want to hear, you know, what happens. And they even had the New York Times or someone did how many seconds she was on, and it was like 15 one game and 26 one game.
Did you see the amount of revenue?
Does that really bother you? I mean, did you see that bothers you?
Well, this is what's crazy, and it doesn't, for any of the Chiefs conspiracy theorists out there, they estimate that Taylor Swift's relationship with Travis Kelce and everything associated with it has generated $331 million in revenue for the NFL.
Yeah, that's crazy, right?
Free revenue. Yeah,
her designer I saw just got her license from the NFL where she can, you know, the designer that.
No, that's Kyle Juszczyk's wife, the fullback for the 49ers. She made that jacket for Taylor Swift that she wore with the big 87 on it.
Mm-hmm. And now it was sick.
And now the NFL is going to like hired her to like make those.
Well, for a small market team like the Chiefs, it brings in revenue from jersey sales and everything.
Chiefs
else.
Are not small market anymore. Well, they jumped that chart.
But they still are. I mean, like money wise, they can't offer as much guaranteed money as, you know, say Dallas or some of these bigger market teams. I mean, it's always been that way. So this brings in more money.
No, you know, they can. A hard salary cap.
I know there's a salary cap, but you can get guaranteed money in your contracts. And
it took an hour and a half, but we're getting that arguing going now.
Well, let's keep going.
Well, because he's wrong.
No, you can pay you can have a better stadium, pay your coaches more, your everybody, but
it's the guaranteed money up front, though, is what I'm talking about, Mike. Yes, the contract I get, but you can you have the money to give that guaranteed money.
Okay. All right. Maybe you're right on that.
Yep. Oh, I know.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, this wasn't a discussion. No.
But there's a lot of people out there that go, this whole Taylor Swift thing is a joke. It's rigged by the NFL for this reason. And then when these numbers come out about how much money it's generated, I don't know, kind of gives you pause.
Yeah, I mean, I'm here for it, man. I mean, I think that I just imagine having the cheat code. Yeah, I mean, it's such a cheat code. I mean, it's put the NFL in front of a whole new world of people that otherwise would care nothing.
That's who's benefiting from it is probably dads out there whose daughters dig Taylor Swift. And, man, now they're all of a sudden, they're Kelce fans. Well,
and they're watching the game because they want to see if she's here.
Oh, there's no doubt. That's what's generated.
You know, I know a lot of dads that are like that, you know, that are talking about it, saying, my daughter's never wanted to watch a football game with me. Now she wants to sit down and watch Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I mean, I don't know, man. I just think that it's the spectacle, and it's a reminder that the spectacle doesn't have to come from for me, I'm going, this is just brilliant marketing. It's opportunistic because you're seeing an opportunity and you're going after it. You're getting everything you can out of it. And it's an opportunity that may go away. Like you, that spectacle can be created in a lot of different ways. Like I think we continue to go down.
Maybe we went through that just a little bit opposite with Lee and Tony, you know?
Yeah.
Good point, T.
It's the spectacle of him being there. It is
the whole thing with their relationship, and then the big announcement at PRI. It's kind of a similar deal.
Absolutely. I mean, him just being there, and then now he's a racer. Like you want that. You want those type of opportunities. I mean, I reserve spots every year going into the World Series of Pro Mod up until a point for those opportunistic things. You know, like maybe I'm going to get a phone call whatever Tony Stewart wants to run a Pro Mod car, right? We worked hard on getting Antron Brown in a Pro Mod car, you know, and you've got to take those opportunities whenever they come up. You've got to lean into them. So I don't know. It's just, I'm reminded that there's a lot of ways to skin this cat and to draw attention. And I think we're seeing the NHRA.
Mark Cruz is, it's like, just can. Like him being there to watch Camry. It's exactly a big deal. The same Mark.
It is the same Mark. Yes.
It is the exact same. Yes. Man. How about those guys? There was one of the, that was one of the things that I was proud of is they were one of the teams for our Skag Pro Hour Equipment Pro Superstar Shootout. One of our invited teams that were able to go out and sell a partnership specific to the race. And that is something that I think was a little bit slept on kind of from by the masses, that this represents another opportunity, another line item on an invoice potentially for a race team. If they've got an established sponsor or if they're looking for sponsors, here's an opportunity to, in a really open environment without a lot of red tape or bureaucracy to deal with, to bring someone in and let them sample the water. And they were able to do that. I'm drawing blank on the company off the top of my head right now.
Yeah. Just got the release from Elon a couple days ago. You find it.
Solid Start / True Brand. Yeah. And I just think that that's a cool thing to see happen.
Oh, is it again?
Solid Start / True Brand. On the door and the roof, aqua prop. Yeah, they're going to be on the door.
I put aqua props on my boat.
Well, I mean, I just think that it's cool to see a team go out and say, hey, we can use this as an opportunity. We're going to go sell something.
Tony Wilson did that with World Series of Pro Mod. He was hitting us up because we had invited him and he'd accepted, but we hadn't done his announcement yet. And he was saying, hey, can you get that announcement out? Because I'm going to try to use this to hunt some sponsors for this race. So even at the World Series level, we've got some guys doing that.
Absolutely, man. I mean, and that's when you start connecting the dots and recognize all the freaking various opportunities that exist for this group of people to work together and all taste some success, man. All right, guys. Well, hey, I do want to take one more moment here and remind you all that each and every episode of the West Buck Show is made possible by way of Redline Synthetic Oils. Redline has a reputation with racers and hardcore enthusiasts for creating products that perform and protect better than any on the market, and they've been doing it since 1979. Whether it's your race car, your tow rig, your motorcycle, or your lawnmower, when you think about lubricants, you need to think about Redline. For more information, log on to redlineoil.com and be sure to tell them thanks for being slick. The official oil of the Drag Illustrated World Series of Pro Mod. So great guys there. Guys, anything else we got to cover? I want to give a huge shout out to all of the winners from this past weekend's U.S. Street Nationals. Hell of a show down there. Again, tip of the cap to Wade Rich, Vic Alvarez, everybody involved, Sharon, the whole team down there that keeps that place rocking and rolling because, man, they have most assuredly made their presence known in the sport of drag racing. And I think there's more work to be done in the coming weeks.
Yeah, they're going to be worn out come March 4th. They hope Vic's got a vacation plan for his whole staff.
Yeah, I actually put it on my big ass calendar that I figure will work, you know, the first part of the week with all the post-race stuff, but we need to be like going into dark mode Thursday,
this? Let me write this down. JT, take notes on this.
All right, so here's what I'm suggesting, okay?
I'm not big on notes.
What? No, okay, he's talking about days that we're going to get off here after the World Series, man. This is important. Let's hear.
Oh, wait. I will take notes on that.
So I'm kind of thinking that we will do the Superstar Shootout Pro Superstar. Can you hear me or did I lose you guys?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, you're good.
Pro Superstar Shootout goes down the 7th, or excuse me. Yeah. 8th, 9th, and 10th. Right. And then so we'll have the Super Bowl on Sunday. Everybody's traveling home and whatnot. Monday, we'll Nobody's probably staying. Are you going to say? Okay. Don't derail me. Yes, so yes. Sunday, the 11th, travel home or whatever, Super Bowl Sunday. Monday, we work Monday, work Wednesday, do the show. Or excuse me, work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, do the show, and then take Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. Right.
Okay.
And then Monday, the 19th, back in the office, and we'll work all that week leading up.
You know we're going to work the whole time.
Yeah, I know. We'll work that whole week. The next 2 weeks we're on, and then we'll do West Buck Show 335 on Wednesday the 6th, and then we take that weekend off. So,
all right.
I'm just pitching it because
I got it on record here. We'll play this back whenever we need some refresh.
I was just thinking, and I mean, you guys know what I mean when I mean take days off. I mean, like, you can leave 5 feet of your computer, you know?
Right.
We could, you know, you can carry your phone, you know, and with notifications on and the volume cranked.
Delete Slack. Delete Slack.
Yeah.
When you return. Yeah.
No, exactly, man.
At channel.
And we've got, you know, what's crazy is between these are three massive weeks for the sport of drag racing. I mean, we're going Pro Superstar Shootout, Lights Out 15, the 15th anniversary of the biggest small tire drag race in the world, and go right into the very next week, Drag Illustrated World Series of Pro Mod. I mean, these are going to be, if you're a drag racing fan, the next 3 weeks, the next month, I mean, this is like, I don't even know how to, and if you time your flow racing's subscription, right, you're going to get a whole lot in a single month subscription.
No, by the year, it's a better deal.
It is a better deal. And you got to support those. I bought
either way, just freaking get it because you're going to want it over the net course of the next month. And if you, and if you're, we'd prefer you get your tickets on Float. If you can't get, then Float is a great option too.
And then Gator Nationals after World Series. I mean, that is incredible. Four events, 5 weeks. Yeah, man, a monument. This is the way you start,
man.
Season, dude.
I want to go to the Gator Nationals too, but with the World Series every year right in front of it, it's tough. But that's my favorite NHRA race by far.
Far and away, my favorite NHRA race. Nothing's even close, to be honest. Nothing's even close.
There's like no off season.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotta love it, man.
Quick wants us to mention we did forget this, the Don Schumacher Trophy. This is a cool deal. Doing Top Fuel versus Funny Car showdown for one pass. For the Don Schumacher Trophy at Pro Superstar Shootout.
We're going to do it Chicago style. So we will take the four, the quickest, the four non-qualifiers, numbers 9, 10, 11, and 12, in both Top Fuel and Funny Car. We will run them all against one another, Chicago style. So it'll be the quickest winning car comes back in Funny Cars, and the quickest winning Top Fuel car comes back in Top Fuel, and they race each other for the first ever Don Schumacher Nitro Superstar Trophy. So
we've got some badass trophies for this event being made by Tom Patsis, Cold Hard Art, with LEDs going on them. I mean, they're pretty freaking sweet, dude. And that one's the coolest one too.
Yeah. It's they're going to be spectacular, man.
Yep.
I tell you what, there was no lack of effort on this deal. I'm ready to put the ball in the air. Yeah. And see what happens next, man. So, well, hey, you guys, thank you all for joining us so much each and every week.
No show next week. We should probably mention that because we're going to be down there. You know, who knows what we'll have going on, what kind of mental state we'll be in. There's no show next week. We'll check in with you guys the following Wednesday if we survived.
Yes, that's the plan. So anyways, thank you guys so much for joining us while we talk drag racing. Remember, click subscribe, help us spread the gospel of drag racing, and we will see you in Bradenton for the Skag Power Equipment Pro Superstar Shootout presented by Johnson's Horsepower Garage next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Come join us, superstarshootout.com today for tickets. Thanks, guys. Talk soon.
Later.
See y'all.